You are now listening to the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network.
So, but you still won an opportunity to direct, though, did you not? Were you still looking to try to direct?
Or I was starting to look for it because it was like, well, okay, I got one foot in the door. Let's see if I can get both feet through the door.
So just quickly, because I watched it last night, Death Ring.
Yes.
Which I really enjoyed.
I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did. I'm glad somebody did.
Norris. McQueen. Swayze. Draco. Death Ring. It's the deadliest game of them all.
So the next time you guys are standing around the water cooler debating who is more macho, now you know, it's Matt Collins.
He can carry his weight on the course.
That's our man. Bring him back alive.
Defend himself.
Inform the guests.
In a brawl.
The games are on.
And he knows how to score. But this time, it's different.
We got over a dozen missing persons we think they're responsible for.
We are 150 miles from the nearest coastline. Just barely a dot on the navigational charts.
Still out of your jurisdiction?
Yes, God damn it.
Well, it ain't out of mine.
A toast to the hunt.
He's about to enter the death ring against five lethal adversaries.
It's not very sporting now, is it?
You already have your weapon, Mr. Collins. You have your brain.
It will take more than luck.
What'll happen to him?
Trust me, you don't want to know.
More than skill.
I'm on him. We are all hunters, and each of us is the prey.
More than strength.
Get the position.
You're in the northeast quadrant.
Because this time he's fighting for his life and hers.
Must make this realistic.
Where are you going?
War games.
Now the hunters are about to become the hunted.
What about our agreement? I've beaten the game.
I think the game should go into sudden death.
In a game that only one man can win.
Cut his throat. And the winner of the next round gets to keep the girl.
Because only one man can wear the ring.
Guess who?
It ain't over till it's over.
Bitch.
And now it's their turn to enter the circle and take up the challenge.
Ladies first.
Death Ring. Mike Norris. Chad McQueen. Don Swayze. Billy Draco.
Good hunting, gentlemen.
Death Ring.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the New World Pictures podcast. We're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
I can think for myself. I don't need anybody planning my life.
Okay, Mark, but we are going to do this episode. And Erica.
I can think for myself. I don't need anybody planning my life.
Okay, but we do need to record this episode, Mark.
I can think for myself. I don't need anybody planning my life.
All right. And Erica.
I'm just hanging out. At batting cages, hoping a gorgeous woman with perfect titties and a lot of money, who makes more money than me, will fall in love with me, and I can make all the right choices and just say, yes, now let's get the fuck out of here. And when somebody asks me about tokens, I can be like, fuck off! I'm with my super rich, hot lady with perfect titties. Stop bothering us. We're on our way, to Norms.
And we are doing something a little bit different this episode. For those of you who know or don't know, we did mention a little bit across our socials, but we were saddened to find out that RJ Kaiser has passed away. He was a longtime editor at New World and many, many other movies. His credits are so vast. He worked on so many movies, but he started out at New World. If you have been with the podcast for a while and you're an NWPP VIP, you know we have had three different interviews with RJ. So, in fact, one of which was just released last month. So we decided to do a little tribute for him, and we are going to be talking about his final directorial feature, 1992's Death Ring.
I have a feeling this hunt is going to provide us with a worthy owner for the Death Ring, so good hunting, gentlemen.
I think RJ would be tickled that we'd be talking about this movie at this
moment. Agree.
We talked to him about this. I had actually just seen this for the first time when we interviewed him the very first time and mentioned it to him. And we talked a little bit briefly about it during that episode. But he approached everything with a really great sense of humor, particularly this particular movie. And I think this was actually kind of a nearly new world, to be perfectly honest, even though it comes out truly in 1993, though I think it's released overseas in 1992. But in the U.S., it goes straight to video. But it is released by, and made, I should say, by Transatlantic Pictures, which we've talked about briefly on this podcast. But that was created by Larry Cuppen and Harry Sloan, the guys who bought New World from Corman. Once they sold New World to another owner, then they went back and they bought most of the motion picture and video assets from New World Entertainment. That's how we ended up with Children of the Corn 2, which we talked about on this podcast. That's, they eventually would make Hellraiser 3, and they started taking a lot of those assets from New World and making stuff from it. And they also financed this movie as well. And so I'm assuming, because a lot of the New World people were working on this, one of the guys who is an executive at New World, William Shields, or Bill Shields, which has been mentioned,
or
in
Willie
many of
Shields.
Our, or Billy Shields, or Bill, or
W.M. Shields. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, the M just thrown in there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the executives, and he was the executive in charge of this movie. So here, lots of New World people came over, and I have to assume that that's how RJ got a hold of this project. I know they came to him with it, and he was left another project to do this. He was excited to actually direct a full movie on his own. But this project is also got to Transatlantic somehow, and I have to assume it's because of the star of the movie.
I mean, there are some big names.
And big names.
Mm-hmm. Big names, I mean big last names.
Big, yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. And particularly Norris, that is to say Mike Norris, Chuck's son, who co-wrote the story for the movie and came up with this script. In fact, this is how they sold the movie. In a lot of different articles in the press release, clearly they had this quote in there from Mike Norris, who says, "I needed a film to do, and there were no scripts coming in that I really liked. So a friend and I wrote Death Ring, found the money to do it, and we just did it."
Hell yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Hell fucking yes. Hell yes. I couldn't hear that in a better way. Love it.
And the plot of this movie got straight up ganked by the people that made Surviving the Game. Am I right?
I just need to take a minute for ganked coming back, because I don't think I have heard ganked.
Did it leave? When did it leave?
It left. It's
never
gone.
Never left my vernacular.
No, it's long
it's
gone.
It's a favorite,
Grandpa,
of the semantic cast. It is a favorite.
Oh, man. It might be. But boy, I have not heard ganked in a long time.
Yeah, this is a riff, like so many movies were riffed of The Most Dangerous Game, such as New World's The Woman Hunt and Turkey Shoot, ooh, a.k.a. Escape 2000, and Hard Target with Jean-Claude Van Damme, yep, and so many other movies. In fact, they
The
had
Hunt in 2020.
The Hunt in 2020, yeah, so many.
So, I know we're not at final questions, but what I'm hearing is that I need to add some of the plot of Death Ring to Steemin.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
So
yes.
For sure.
I need to gank some of the plot and add it to Steemin. Got it.
If it's a bunch of naked dudes talking in a steam room and then one of them says, "You should take this gamble. I'd like you to play this game." And the rest of the movie is them hunting this dude in a towel. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I think you've got a million dollar movie here. A billion dollar movie, pardon me.
Yeah. It's like Naked and Afraid, but a manhunt.
It starts simply in a steam room.
I'm still going to call it Steemin.
And still
though.
Called Steemin with an N. Cuz
I have a lot of dudes who have verbally agreed. don't think I forgot previous guests. Mm-hmm. You're still locked in.
Yeah.
You signed a verbal NDA.
She can't remember
and you also
who you are, but she
agreement.
Remembers your commitment.
Thank you for calling them commitments.
Got a lot of unfollows right
as there. Schlong is locked in. Mm-hmm.
This one ganked the premise so hard that they actually thank the director of the 1932 film The Most Dangerous Game in the ending credits.
Wow. Wow. They thanked the gank.
Wow, I missed that. Okay.
They ganked and thanked.
That's the quote.
They ganked and thanked. Now, as much as they got money, I have to assume, they got money from a transatlantic. RJ told us a lot about how the budget kept going down.
And then that was another thing where it was $3 million down to $2 million, down to $1.5 million, down to $1.25 million.
Okay.
And the DP quit 1 week before we started shooting. Wow. And Chris Lee had to find another DP. And again, another case of locations falling out, you know, having a location bought and, you know, money paid out, and then showing up there and saying, no, we're not letting you shoot here.
Just lots of issues.
Well, as you know, Ryan, filming something in San Diego is hard.
It's so difficult. It's so tough. Because you're like, can't we just chill somewhere? Do we have to shoot today? Oh, man.
I know. There's a swell coming in. We really want to be at the beach. It's tough.
Why are you being so righteous about having permits to shoot a movie in this park, brah? It's a public park. We should be able to exhibit our creativity the way we want.
I'm pretty sure it's because of that Simon and Simon didn't last as long as it should have.
Oh, right. Simon and Simon. Yeah. That was shot in San Diego?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
I mean, at least as well as credits.
Renegade, a movie that, yeah. A TV show that was owned for a part of its life by New World. So, for that shot in San Diego. This actually does shoot a lot in L.A., though. They shot, like, in Calabasas, Malibu Creek State Park. They shot in the Bronson Caves, Griffith Park. They shot in El Monte, Placentia Canyon, all over the place to create this island resort that is this island that they have to survive on. But you're right, Mark. It does start in San Diego. And, like, I know you and I grew up in San Diego, so I was like, do you remember watching your first Survival of the Fittest competition? Do you remember how old you were when you first saw it? Or,
I mean, how can I forget?
Such a
tradition. To the TV. Here, and you know, the one thing I was disappointed with this movie is they couldn't get Lauren Nancaro to do the actual announcing, because he was so pivotal to the real Survival of the Fittest contest that we would watch every year in San Diego.
I mean, it felt weird with the commentary. Wasn't Hacksaw Hamilton who was...
Yeah, who was there just...
Who was there always
let's
doing...
Talk, let's talk survival sports.
It's getting deep. I hope anyone got that.
Remember they made fun of it on an episode of Himmel at Large? And
that's
I was
right.
Just like, God,
yeah, Larry Himmel was
just,
all
it's just
over it.
So San Diego, yeah. This sport. So yeah. I was happy
Skip
to see
and Biff
it
tried to enter the...
Yeah, remember? And then Biff couldn't make it, and
no,
Skip finished.
Was like,
and
it was a mess.
Hilarity.
But
ensued.
A great three-parter episode.
Right.
No one got so. Erica's left behind. She's just waiting for this to end. It was in San Diego that they set the movie, and Mike Norris wins the Survival of the Fittest competition, which gets the attention of Billy. I'm sorry, the trailer tells me I've been saying his name wrong my whole life. I've been saying Drago, but apparently it's Drago. According to the trailer.
Yeah. I mean, tomato, tomato, right? It's just... However you want to say it.
I guess it's, but anyway, he gets the attention.
I mean, I've only heard every other person my entire life call it Drago.
You guys are both wrong. It's B.ill Drago.
Mm-hmm. He leaves out the Y.
Fair.
You're all wrong.
His assistant sees the competition, as you would, because that, I mean, it was in the 90s.
Yeah.
It was like a day didn't go by. They talked about the survival of the fittest competition. Like, it was like a constant in all of our lives.
Holy shit, brah. It made me do the whole race, and I couldn't even get a burrito with guac afterwards.
I mean, I
ate a fucking taco. Starved.
This race kind of ranked up with, like, the America's Cup in, as far as San Diego lore, you know? It's like, I like to think that Mike Norris.
Mike Norris.
I mean, he's sort of like the Dennis Conner of San Diego, you know? I mean, he's representing all of us. He's representing America in this race.
Losing his hair. Spent too much time in the sun. It's really kind of, kind of cooked himself.
He didn't mix in the sun in his hair very well. It's a little patchy.
Yeah.
But he put it in there, man. That was a lot of spraying. He did a couple 2 weeks there where he was really...
For sure.
Throwing in some extra lemon juice. Mark and I used it.
Yeah.
Mark particularly. Everybody used it, Ryan. Everybody was using it. Sun-In's peer pressure went beyond the borders of California. Those of us in the Midwest were using it when our parents would buy it for us.
But not everybody used it on their pubes.
Oh.
Some of us were special.
I guess not. I guess you did it Cali style.
Exactly. Cali, I know, Cali pubes is what I like to call them. I mean, everybody did, but, you know.
Yeah,
that's fair. That's fair. Peer pressure.
They find out about this competition, and they go about taking Mike Norris and his girlfriend. Now, his girlfriend, they're having some difficulties because she makes a lot of money, and she wants to settle down with him and have kids, and they've got this gorgeous house with a pool. And I'm sorry. What's his problem again? I can't remember.
I know we're not at final questions, but if a beautiful woman with perfect titties says, "Marry me," do you say no because she makes more money?
I can think for myself. I don't need anybody planning my life.
He's an idiot.
That's what he says.
He's an idiot. Call her. Yeah. Tell her I accept.
And honestly, I think the
marriage is on. She's my one and only. Let's go. Will I fight Billy Dra? Excuse me, Bill B. Ildrago for her? Yes, I will.
And I think she might have taken off on him, but she also gets kidnapped at the batting cages when they go and get him. It's smart they chose that location because you let your guard down when you're having when you're in the batting cages, is having the time of your life.
Thank you. You feel safe at a batting cage because it's just like, what's the worst that could happen? You could get knocked unconscious by a flying ball. It's time to pour your heart out.
Yeah.
Or, one of our family friends took his son and he was showing him how to bat at a batting cage and the ball smacked him right in the mouth and knocked all his teeth out. That happened when we were kids.
All of his teeth?
Well, at least his front ones.
Those are the important ones.
Which is why if I was scouting the locations, I would have picked the bumper boats. Because I feel like that's a more dangerous place to be kidnapped.
Yeah.
That's cute. Yeah.
You would never.
Plus, we could have had a fun scene where the bad guys are trying to chase him on the bumper boats. We could have had a bumper boat chase scene.
They're trying to lean over the boat to try to get his mouth.
That would have been adorable. That would have been adorable.
With the chloroform.
They'd have been like, how do these boats work? Chloroform.
Incidentally... chloroform doesn't take like just a couple seconds to knock you out. Like it takes a while.
Oh, tell us more.
Did somebody
Mark.
Crunch chloroform? I hope, and they don't have personal experience with it.
I'm just saying, it doesn't work the way you think it does because it's going to cause
irritation.
How long
does it take you at
dizziness.
Night to knock yourself out with chloroform? Which I know is how your nightly routine. How long does it take for you?
It takes 5 to 10 minutes rather than seconds.
And you know what?
The timing is highly unpredictable.
Oh,
so
shit.
Listen, we need to have a movie where someone gets knocked out with chloroform, but we have to stay on them for yeah, 5 to 10 minutes.
They have to keep holding it down on their face for 10 minutes. It's the They Live of chloroform scenes. They fight for so long to knock someone out.
Guys, I hear you. I'll just add it to steaming. Maybe it'll even be a hilarious scene where we start at the crotch with the chloroform and work our way up. I don't know. Trademarking it. If I see it anywhere else, I'll know you stole it from here, you stealer.
Or ganked it.
You ganked it from here, you stealer.
Sorry, not to get all legalese on this podcast.
But it's ganked.
You do not want to be found guilty of ganking. Let's just say that. Chloroform was like, there's a couple things in here that were predominant throughout a lot of movies in around this period, particularly the 80s. And chloroform just felt like, growing up, I was like, there's just a thing that, like, if you sniff that, you're out, dude. Like,
you're getting knocked out.
You don't have any, you got no choice.
Oh, anytime somebody's like, need a tissue? I'm like, no, thank you.
Which made me think, like, it's, you got to have two things, which I don't know. I know how to possibly get one, but at the time I was a kid, I was like, God, I don't know how. You have to, I guess, always have a hanky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you got to find the chloroform. Where do you even, where do you go get that? Where is that at?
I don't know.
They don't sell that at the drugstore. Where do you go get that? That's not easy.
Like, people had it. It was readily accessible.
They always had it. They had it available.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think the A-Team had it. Didn't they, like, put Mr. T to sleep with the chloroform a bunch of times?
You mean B.A. Baracus? Just to make sure that we're talking about
character. Sorry. He was afraid of planes. So they had to
relax him before flying with chloroform.
Very funny that one of their members was a pilot. It didn't make it a lot of sense that you'd have a pilot, that's his skill set, and a guy who can't. Anyways.
So chloroform was used both recreationally and medically.
Well, I use it recreationally every night. And that's how I go. That's daddy's little sleep tonic.
I'm using it recreationally right now. Guys, let's wrap it up in 5 to 10 minutes. I'm chloroforming.
Yeah.
She's got 10 minutes of breathing. We gotta wrap this up in 10.
I'm taking deep breaths, guys. It could be 4 minutes.
Lately, though, I just drop it in the Vicks vaporizer right next to my bed and just let that just soothe over me in the room.
It's nice.
I get menthol scent.
You're perpetually fighting off a chest cold, so this makes sense. I mean, it's chronic. You really should get that looked at. That is chronic.
He is getting it looked at with chloroform. Yeah.
Every day I say, I'm going to go to the doctor tomorrow. So then, you know, eventually tomorrow.
They say, get your rest. I'm trying to get my, I'm putting on the Vicks and then I'm chloroforming myself. I don't know what else I can do, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so now you guys all know my nightly routine. And then this is why I'm often late in the morning to things. Because as it turns out, you don't wake up when you want to.
By 2 or 3 hours, he wakes up like you would in the back of a dark van. Where he's like, where am I? What happened? You chloroformed yourself last night like you do every night.
So then he wakes up relieved because he's like, I got a good night's sleep and I wasn't kidnapped. Well, this day's, it can only go up from here.
It's going to be great. It's going to be
great. It's noon, Mark. Only go up from here. No. That's not good.
I needed rest.
That's not good.
I needed rest.
So that's Mike Norris. That's our main character. He's going to get chloroformed and then brought to an island where 5 middle-aged men are going to hunt him down. But that's not our only characters because we also have Chad McQueen, who is in a quest to smoke all of the cigarettes.
Cigarette? I'm trying to quit.
Also has zero problem being a third wheel.
Yep.
No problem at all.
Yeah.
You know, he's like...
Lives for it.
Yeah, he lives for it. He's like, I know you guys want to get together and celebrate tonight, maybe do a little hanky-panky, but I'm going to still crash at your house, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if this was the script or like RJ Kaiser or something, because... They have that, once he wins the survival of the fittest competition, she's like, we should go out to dinner. He's like, let's go somewhere quiet, somewhere where we can just hang out. And then they go to a bar, and then also Chad McQueen's there. So it's like, was he always supposed to be there? Because I think that makes the joke kind of complete, that not only does he want to go to a bar, which is not that quiet, but also it brings his buddy. I don't know.
Which totally got ganked by Shaun of the Dead. They just go to the Winchester.
Oh, that's right. Oh, shoot.
Oh, yeah.
And his
yeah.
buddy comes along.
Mm-hmm.
Not only does he is he kind of a third wheel, most of the movie he's like just going to the cops, trying to tell them information, trying to find out. He's just, he goes and tracks down the information of where this island is. And that's a whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because in this modern era of 1992, there are still islands that have not been charted on any maps or provided a name. They're just not mystery when, islands.
150 miles from San Diego? You could be talking about anywhere. There's an island?
How could anyone even go that far away from San Diego?
It's 150 miles away from San Diego.
It's probably not even on a nautical map, bro. Check your nautical maps, motherfucker. You don't believe me? Check the fucking nauticals.
Also, the guy he goes to is this guy in like a smoky room.
I loved that.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it so much because they were actually like, we're not going to hurt you. Here's actually a lot of information that you need.
Yeah.
We're actually going to help you. But we're setting this up like we're not you. Going to. Which is our friend, Dennis Lipscomb. Or Lipscomb, however you want to say it.
Thank you. The B is not silent.
Lipscomb, who was Comba. His sister.
Comba. Mm-hmm. Lipscomb.
Lipscomb.
Thank you.
Who was in Sister, and he actually is uncredited in this movie.
What?
Really?
Yeah.
With a name like Lipscomb, you think you'd want it on there.
You'd think you'd always want to be on there. But yeah, he plays Jessup, who gives him the location, tells him where this island is, and has been beaten up on one of the guys that took Mike Norris from the batting cages. And also has a moment where his girlfriend shows up wanting a little nookie, and he's like, I gotta go save my buddy. But his storyline is just like, I love it, but it's like we don't need any of it. But I love it so much, I wouldn't want any of it taken out. I wouldn't want a minute of it gone.
Yeah.
Two questions. I know we're not on final questions yet, but if you were given... as a just curious civilian, unprecedented access to a dead body in the morgue of a police department and shown the body, would you just be like, cool, so what are we doing next? Or would you need to take a beat and kind of collect yourself on that one?
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know why he trusts him so much, but we only get two scenes out of the police captain or the police detective, who again is also uncredited. Harrison Page, who is from Sledgehammer.
Oh, right, yes.
He plays the police chief in that, and so another new world, familiar new world face.
Also, I know we're still not at final questions, but
we're not
the
doing
woman
final questions.
that tries to seduce Mr. McQueen. She's then hanging out by the helicopter. Like, what does she do for a living?
She worked there, I thought.
But hanging out on a lawn chair? Like, is she just supervise? Is she like the security guard for the helicopter?
Sure.
She.
I mean, she walked in to that hangar and was like, hey, do you guys know where? And they were like, you have the job. She wasn't even applying. And they were like, you're hired. And she was like, wait, I was just trying to find direct. And they were like, you're hired. And she was like, all right.
I already have a job. You're hired.
Okay, we'll increase the salary. No problem.
While we're talking about funny names, speaking of Lipscomb, there's also Branscomb Richmond, who plays the guy that is murdered early on.
At last, but not least, we have Mr. Cross.
Why don't you just cut the crap, Danny boy? I sat through this shit the last time, and the idiot you picked then was a complete washout.
Branscomb Richmond is from Renegade, the TV show we were just mentioning.
Imagine if his name was Branscomb Lipscomb.
I mean...
Ryan, can we have another kid just so I can name it Branscomb Lipscomb?
I think there's no better reason.
Yay.
And we get to our third big star an hour later.
an hour into this movie. We have to wait an hour.
If you came in going, let's see my boy Don Swayze. Yeah. I love me some Don Swayze. Like, just sit back and relax, dude. You got time. You got time. Mm-hmm. It's not coming soon.
And let me just add this little snippet. If you love P. Swayze, you're going to love D. Swayze. I mean, it's easy.
Still a Swayze.
Yeah.
It's still
it's easy.
A Swayze.
D. Swayze, easy to love.
Yeah, for sure.
I loved everything about D. Swayze. I loved his fake beard that was like, that was makeup.
Yeah. Just,
yes.
I loved that. I loved his intro. I loved that he came in and they were just like, bro number three, let's do it. Like, it took no time for them
loved
to just
it.
Be like...
Loved their meet cute in the cave. That was adorable.
Yep. Well, these guys, they want fighters. I guess they figured since I was a survival instructor that I'd be some Daniel Boone type. What they got was somebody who's real good at hiding.
Yeah, until I dropped in.
Don't feel bad, that's how I found the place. Only I fractured my leg in the fall. So I've been holed up here for like the past couple of months.
Couple months, huh? I want you on my side.
This poor guy's been, what has he been doing to survive? I had so many questions, but they're just like, whatever, dude, now we're bros, come with me.
Yeah,
and just
best
put your
now.
Life on the line for me. He even saves Mike Norris's life. I'm like, there's no, he was in a cave hanging out, hiding.
Yeah.
I loved it. I love Don Swayze so much in this. It's so great.
He was just catching the surf, bro. He was like living his best life. He was like,
hell
dude,
yeah.
There's like, here's the thing, man. On the other side of this island is a Roberto's. And I just like hang out there, get a California burrito to start my day, go catch some waves.
Let me get this straight. You want to open a Roberto's 150 miles away from San Diego?
People are going to show up, bro. If you build it, they will come, bro. They're going to be here. Don't worry about it.
We're bringing Mexican food to a Mexican island.
Hell yeah.
So,
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that would have been like one of the San Clemente Islands, right? I mean, if we're going to... I mean, I'm not trying to be the Magellan of the podcast, but I mean, that's...
You're not that's the Magellan. You're the Mark Jellin.
And you know what? You're not trying to be, but you are. You're like that girl at the airfield. You have the job. You're hired.
I already have a job. I have a job, guys.
You're hired, Mark. You're hired.
The Magellan.
You're Mark Jellin.
Get the map out and start finding a course to this island. It's 150 miles. I don't need to tell you. You're the Marcellin. You know what you're doing.
Find it. I think what I loved most about it was his backstory when he tells it why he's in the cave to begin with.
Yes.
Is that he set a trap for them and faked his own death using quicksand, which made me laugh out loud for a while, because quicksand was a legitimate concern. Growing up, I was like, shit, I have to watch out for quicksand. Like, it is dangerous. And so, of course, he tricked all these stupid rich fucks into believing that he just stumbled, a survivalist, stumbled into some quicksand, and that was that.
If you watch a lot of movies and TV during that time, and you decided you were going to walk down a sandy path, you were going to have to look at your feet to make sure you didn't step in quicksand, and you were going to have to always look over your shoulder to see if somebody was going to come
up
behind you and chloroform you. So you were just living
in those
fear.
Rich fucks, because of the 1980s, they were also, when they saw the quicksand, they're like, well, we should search the quicksand and see if there's a body. And they're like, I don't fucking touch quicksand.
No,
he's dead.
They're like,
he's gone.
Are you kidding me?
We are going to trust that he's dead, because listen, you know, we're not survivalists, and he died in quicksand.
Yeah.
So I'm not.
He was survivalist, and he couldn't
that.
Survive quicksand. Then fuck it, walk away.
Yeah.
We'll just hunt another man another time.
Seriously, there's another year. We'll do it next year.
Also,
fine, no big deal.
His story was that he was just a survivalist teacher, which means they like probably that probably Billy Drago's assistant. She just goes and probably takes the course, and then is like, this guy. I gotta take this guy.
God, I hope so. I hope that's how it played out. Do we need to make a prequel to this? So that we learn D. Swayze's backstory.
I feel we could do like a prequel where he just does the same thing, mm-hmm. but with different people, but he doesn't die. Mm-hmm. Billy Drago. He lives on.
Right. No. He took the survivalist class, Ryan. That's how this all started.
Oh, of course. Right.
In our story.
So we're just doing basically the Don Swayze one. And this one then is like the prequel, and we see how what happened with him.
Mm-hmm. In the prequel, who's going to play B. Illy Drago's character?
Ryan.
Oh,
obviously.
Okay.
Obviously. Yeah, obviously. I mean, come on.
Yeah, yeah.
How,
start growing that hair out now.
Start growing it now.
Yeah.
Grow it out.
I liked the guy that the businessman who was just all about the hunt, but didn't seem physically equipped to do anything necessary to capture and kill a person on an island.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I felt like that would be me in this scenario. I'd be like, I run a business and I like to hunt.
Mm-hmm. That was his skill. Like everybody had a weapon. One guy like had a spear, another guy had a knife, and this guy was like, I'm unassuming. That was his weapon, was like, you wouldn't suspect me to actually kill. And then I like, while you aren't looking, and I'm like, you go get that guy, you deserve it. And then I like choke you out and you don't even know that I was gonna do it.
He was the scariest one of all, honestly. That's the role that's played by Ryan. Sorry, Ryan, you can't play B. Dot Illy Drago. You have to play creepy businessman with a kink.
Okay, Ryan, you don't need to grow out your hair that much longer.
Okay.
Cut it. You gotta cut it shorter.
While we were talking, I grew it out long. So
Sorry, dude. So
committed I am. It takes me no time to grow the hair out that long. Speaking of that prison, when they get locked up, what a view, right? Wasn't that like the prettiest prison? My God,
that kidnapping was like the best thing that could have happened to them. Seaside views, full closet of clothes.
Yeah.
Did it bring them together that like they were at this beachfront prison with somebody who clearly has more money than his girlfriend, and he was like, okay.
Yeah, that's why he was so mad. He was like, you won't kill me, you rich fuck. I'll kill you.
I mean, we can pick apart all the kind of Home Alone traps that are set and all of that, but I think the thing that was most unbelievable was in the introduction when B. Illy Drago is introducing all the people that have paid to become part of this hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Fiance with the perfect boobies is at the table. Mm-hmm. The most unbelievable part is not one person grabbed a roll from the ample basket of rolls that are sitting on the table.
They're right there,
they
guys.
Paid
eat
for
up.
This.
Eat up.
I don't believe that.
They paid for this
that
meal.
During the introductions, you wouldn't just grab one and be like, mm-hmm. ooh, that one's sourdough. Mm-hmm. I think I'll get in on that. Maybe there's some honey butter on
this
table.
You're going to go out running through this island trying to hunt a dude down. Carb load, bro.
Carb up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Carb up.
Seriously.
What do you think?
Come on. I mean, they'll drink snake blood, but no one's going to touch the delicious rolls that's sitting on the table.
I know, dude. Or,
I don't believe that.
I don't buy it. In fact, like, you could use your bread in the snake blood.
Oh,
and it would just absorb
bit, yeah.
and then like you'd have some a little like sourdoughness to it. Yeah. Come on. Mm. Come on.
I know we're not at final questions, but like snakes are cold blooded, so like is snake blood served chilled?
It's by its nature.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's always chilled.
That's tough. I'll take a sip. I'll take a grande snake blood, please. Thank you. No room for cream. I drink my snake blood red.
I like it au naturel.
Yeah.
He does get a break because that guy in the suit jacket does take down one of the assailants. And I gotta say, I feel like RJ would even appreciate this. I love the amount of shots of guys taking shots at Mike Norris and they have an arrow and it's just like already in the item and he's like looking at it and then he looks up like, oh, like he almost got hit. The amount of times they do that is amazing, and I loved it so much.
It's always like moving, so like right before they hit action, someone would walk by and just like flicked it with their finger, so it's sort of wobbling a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's it. And they just,
and he's like, oh, you almost got me. Honestly, it could have happened 20 more times, and I would have been like, fantastic.
Every fight scene was great. Every like quip, every like, looks like it's lights out or whatever. Ladies first.
Come
like,
on.
Oh my God. Yes. Fantastic. I loved all that stuff. This movie was so fun. My one regret or my one beef, if I have any, is that I watched it alone. And I only watched it alone because the first time I tried to watch it with Ryan, I was too tired. So I fell asleep. So I had to watch it during the day when my eyelids weren't too heavy. So, yeah, it's great. I highly recommend it. Give it a watch.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. It's funny. It's action-packed. It's silly. There's boobies. There's a titty count. Yeah. It's great. Count.
Several. It's
There's no reason why why businessman kills the other guy that's trying to kill. Like,
no reason.
No reason.
To There's make
no
it harder.
Yeah.
There's dude. McQueen Jr. is flying a helicopter and dropping hand grenades.
Yes. I know we're not at final questions, but how close do you have to be to someone to successfully drop a grenade on them from a helicopter?
Right, exactly. But
couldn't they just run away? They saw him pulling the pin and tossing it, and they were like, oh no, a grenade.
Oh no, it's coming towards us. Plus, they light the sky up with a thousand bullets and never hit that helicopter.
Nope.
Can you hit a helicopter? How close do you need to be?
Of course.
Yes, you can hit a helicopter.
Of course you can. He's not flying that high.
Absolutely you can.
Oh, shit. Okay, guys. Calm down, guys. Whoa. I'm sorry. I'm not from San Diego. I don't know how close I need to be to a helicopter to shoot it with a gun. Clearly. Dude,
that is a rite of passage in San Diego. You got to shoot your first helicopter.
Shoot it down.
Normally you do that in 11th grade. I mean, that's kind of normal.
There was an opportunity for RJ to, in the trailer, when they're shooting at the helicopter, if that's even in the trailer, if they shoot at the helicopter and just put in that shot that they always put of the helicopter exploding, that they put into, like, you know, CoverGirl models and, like, every single trailer. It was something that Joe Dante and Alan Arkush did all the time. That would have been a perfect opportunity to just throw that in there. Because I do feel like he learned a lot from working on New World to make this movie. Mm-hmm. And down to some of the, like, nudity that's just, like, when Chad McQueen's girlfriend just shows up and she just has her shirt open, just, like, always. I mean, This is the guy who told us about how Corman told him to milk the boobs in Galaxy of Terror. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I wonder if that just echoed in his mind as he was, you know, making this movie.
It must have. Yeah.
I think this movie is a riot and it's fun and it's worth a watch. It's a good time. And afterwards, Ryan and I were talking about RJ and reminiscing about him and saying how he was like rather hard on himself and rather critical on himself and on his work. And of course, now, hindsight 2020, I wish I would have said, but it's so great. Mm-hmm. And there's absolutely an audience for it. And there's people that will enjoy it. And certainly, will there be people that are like, meh? Sure, but that's with everything.
Yeah, of course.
But at the end of the day, it's creative and it's art and it's subjective. And I think this was a great time.
I mean, I hope he was able to look back and, you know, see, like, so many people do love Godzilla 1985 and so many people do love Hell Comes to Frogtown. And those were, like, things he contributed to and he didn't fully direct Hell Comes to Frogtown. So I know he wanted this opportunity to really make his own movie. And then this one did fine. But, like, he didn't get other opportunities, which is a shame because he definitely deserved more opportunities after this movie, for sure.
Yeah.
And then he just said, I'm just going to go in and I don't know, do ADR for every movie from, you know, that's made in the next several decades, which he did. And he worked on, like, so many movies, so many huge titles. It's a bummer because he really had, he could do it. He showed he can do it. And this movie's really good. And it's a bummer. It's kind of ignored. It's not, there's not a lot out there about this movie. And when we talked to him the first time and I had just seen it, I was being, I mean, we're always being honest with people, but they're always a little bit like, you like that movie? Okay. But I'm like, yeah. No, I really liked the movie. I told him I really liked it. He's like, oh, I'm glad someone did. And I'm like, I really did. I thought it was really, I think it's really a good movie. I think it's a lot of fun.
I do too. Mm-hmm. But then again, I mean, we don't know. Maybe he, after making that, he realized like maybe directing just isn't something that he finds, like that he's passionate about. Like maybe he was like, you know what, this other part of showbiz, I enjoy more versus like taking on, there's a lot of responsibility being a director. Not that I've ever been one. I'm just assuming, and you know, I've listened to enough podcasts with directors that say it's a lot of responsibility. You're, it consumes your life for the entire time that you're in that shoot. So maybe he was like, I did it, and like I can check the box that I shot a movie and I directed it, and that's awesome. And maybe it was like, I don't know if I want to do this again. It may not have been the movie itself. It may have just been like, eh, this isn't really
good. Yeah, and he did talk to us a little bit about how it was a lot, you know.
Yeah.
Some of the challenges of it, I think he just thought, this isn't worth it. And I could see him thriving and doing ADR, having people come in, recording, you know, knowing how to cut all this stuff together, having an editorial brain, like, you know, and obviously he excelled at it. He wrote a book about it. We'll put that in the show notes. Go pick up that book if you want to learn about how to do ADR by somebody who did it for every movie, pretty much.
Seriously.
Almost all of the movies. Yeah. Look at his IMDb. I'm not kidding around.
Movies. He made it for the movies.
Yeah. So.
And I just, before we, I don't know if we're about to wrap up, but I also want to point out, because I didn't get to say this at the beginning. Not only does the movie start off with the title of the movie using sort of that animated steel look, sort of like the poster of heavy metal, which just kind of sets like, okay, all right, let's see where this goes. And then is immediately followed by a fucking banger song by the Motels.
Yes.
I mean, the movie starts off with all the right pieces.
Well, and speaking of New World, like the title sequence was done by Ernest Farino, who we talked to on this podcast in July.
Nice.
Another New World guy who, of course, comes in and does the title. But, like, the song choice, that would have been RJ, I'm sure. So,
yeah.
Great song choice. Kicks it off with a bang as he's going through, you know, these various events.
Like, it's a truly insane obstacle course.
But just nuts. But yeah. I loved it. Yeah, I mean, it's a bummer that he's gone for so many reasons. And, of course, you know, our condolences go out to his family and his friends. But
yes, of course.
We could have got him in here to do, like, a commentary for A Death Ring, which would have been amazing. I would have loved to have heard more of his stories.
Yeah.
And, by the way, just to close out, this does get released onto video. That's where it released in the United States in, I believe, March of 1993. By New Line, not New World, but New Line, because Transatlantic didn't have their own video division. They weren't really even distributors. I think they hooked up with other people when they did Hellraiser. They actually did Hellraiser 3 and 4, and Children of the Corn 2. I don't think they distributed that themselves exactly, but it does get released for the low price of $90. By July of that year, it was reported that New Line had sold 20,000 copies, enough to make a profit.
Wow. Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah. Nice. And finally, just one last note, because I you know, guy, I say it a lot on the podcast. I'm not a big fan of IMDb trivia. I never know if it's real or not. I don't like to go to it. But there's so little in this movie, and I really did look around. And I couldn't find too much, but the IMDb trivia feels real. Now, I don't know if you guys watched it, but last night, when we were watching it again, I watched through the credits.
Okay.
There's an extra little snippet of a scene.
I didn't see it.
Which is just Mike. You don't see anybody's face or anything. You just see Mike Norris's legs, and he drops the bat against a little wall, I guess, from the batting cage. So that's it. That's the last little, it's a little bit where you just see legs go by and he drops the bat.
Huh.
So this IMDb trivia says the shot of the baseball bat at the very end of the credits was a joke between the director and the producers. When shooting the batting cage sequence, the crew demanded that Kaiser shoot a shot of Norris putting the bat down before talking to the bad guys. Kaiser thought the shot was unnecessary, but shot the insert anyway. All during editing, the producers kept asking if the bat shot was ever going to be used, so Kaiser put it at the very end of the movie. And that really
that's amazing.
I'm not trying to pretend like we knew RJ so well, but we did talk to him several times, but just it feels like RJ. I mean, that just feels like a joke. He would be like, okay.
Yeah.
You want this so bad? It's at the tail end of the credits. There you go.
You didn't specify where it had to be. You just asked if it was in it.
It just felt like his sense of humor. And it's also so funny to me because I saw that and I was like, he puts the bat down? What's that? What was that for? Like, I didn't get it. Like, no one, you, it's so inside. It's such an inside joke. I love that's in there in the movie. It's amazing. But we're just sad for RJ's family and his friends, but we are so glad that we got to talk to him. Mm-hmm. We were thrilled that we got to do. We got three different interviews on this podcast. So please go back and listen. Check out those interviews. They're fantastic. He had some incredible stories. Go watch Death Ring.
Mm-hmm.
It's so fun.
You should be able to find, I think, that the Blu-ray that we have, I believe this might be out of print. It's a Code Red. Might be out of print, but you should be able to probably find it on eBay, I bet. But it's also...
I also watched it on Prime.
Yeah, it's on Prime. It's out there. Yeah. You can stream it. You can watch it. And it's worth it. It's a lot of fun. And so, RJ, we thank you for all your time, all your work. Incredible career. So thank you for listening to this episode. Check out all those things and check out those episodes and our interviews with RJ at our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. And we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, a part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody. We could talk all night. We could. We'd love it. But it's, it's getting late. And so I feel like we've taken so much of your time already. We can't thank you enough. Thank you so much for this. This was
You're more than welcome.
Really appreciate this. Really great to meet you, RJ. Thank you so much.
All righty.
And we'll talk soon. Thank you
so much. If you have anything you want to follow up on, let me know and we can do it again.
That would be great. Awesome. Oh, thank you. We will. Okay. All right. You take care. Have a good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening. To hear more shows from the Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network, please select the link in the description.
What happens when the brain trust of Antenna Releasing and Deaf Crocodile join forces to create a space catering to the most ardent physical media-focused cinephiles? Adventures in Analog. That's what. A brand new physical media fulfillment center, video storefront, and micro cinema located in Lee's Summit, Missouri, just outside of Kansas City in the Kansas City metro area. The back room of the facilities will consist of a fulfillment center for all Deaf Crocodile and Antenna Releasing titles and merchandise. The front will consist of a physical media lover's dream, discs galore, merchandise, film ephemera, and a micro cinema where we'll be showing some of the coolest titles from Antenna Releasing, Deaf Crocodile, Terrorvision, New Wave Video, and more. It's your one-stop shop for celebrating your love of film with folks who get it. If you are looking to help support, the time for that is now. We are currently running a Kickstarter campaign until the end of August to raise startup costs to make the space amazing. We have perks on our campaign that you can choose from that will be able to get you one-of-a-kind items like autographed original pieces of art, your name emblazoned on a wall, your ability to name a chair in the micro cinema, and so much more. Check out the perks today and donate if you're able.